Welcome to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Today we pay tribute to NEA jazz master and drummer Albert Tootie Heath, who passed away this week at the age of 88.
And I can't remember when I first had an opportunity to play with both of my brothers. And I think it was on a professional level in a club or something somewhere like that, but never at home did I have that opportunity because I was younger.
We find out about a re-engagement program in Newark that is changing lives.
Coming back to society after being incarcerated, it could cause a lot of things, mental health. You know what I'm saying? Because you don't have support.
We'll get a commentary from Mildred Antenor, and we'll find out about a special project going on in Newark that involves jazz.
Being a Newark native and growing up in the city of Newark, I have always been surrounded by artists and creatives.
All this coming up today on the WBGO Journal. Drummer and NEA jazz master Albert Tootie Heath is being remembered for all his wonderful contributions to jazz and beyond. Tootie Heath died Wednesday in Santa Fe, New Mexico at the age of 88. He was the youngest of the Heath brothers, a group that was formed in Philadelphia, who all left their mark on the music world. His older siblings were Percy and Jimmy. The cause of Tootie Heath's death was leukemia, according to Beverly Heath, his wife of 50 years. It was back in 2005 that Tootie spoke with WBGO's Michael Bourne about a special recording.
This is your tune called For Seven's Sake.
Yeah.
Should we know about this?
Well, it came about through my experience with African drumming. And I found out the African musicians did not shy away from odd meters, and we call them odd meters because we don't do them that often, or it's not that common in our music. So they're called odd meters, but they're very normal and very natural for people of other cultures. So I became exposed through some of a Nigerian drum teacher I had in Los Angeles named Francis Awe from Nigeria, and he taught us that one is everything. And so there was no fear of 7 or 11 or anything like that. So this composition, the melody came to me. I couldn't tell you where it came from, but it came to me one day. I sat down at the piano and I could just pick out this melody. It just kind of came to me. So I made this little arrangement in 7-4, and it went on from there. And my brothers were, you know, interested in it enough to put it on our album, and I was very grateful, and that's how this piece came about.
Do you remember the first time you ever played with either brother, or your folks, because your folks, very musical family you came from?
Now, Michael, the very first time is very difficult to kind of remember because it's been like over a period of, since I was 12 years old or so, I've been kind of playing the drums, and I can't remember when I first had an opportunity to play with both of my brothers. And I think it was on a professional level in a club or something somewhere like that, but never at home did I have that opportunity because I was younger and, of course, very inexperienced. I didn't know what I was doing, and I was not there yet in terms of musicianship or adult hood or whatever, maturity or whatever, so I don't know.
Tootie's first ever recording date was 1957 as part of John Coltrane's debut session as a leader. You can read his bandmate Ethan Iverson's tribute to Tootie Heath at WBGO.org. Albert Tootie Heath, dead at the age of 88, he will certainly be missed. The Re-Engagement Center has officially opened in Newark, thanks to a partnership between Mayor Raz Baraka and Newark Public School Superintendent Roger Leone. The Re-Engagement Center at 375 MacArthur Highway, within the Newark One-Stop Career Center, is designed to reconnect opportunity youth with education and career paths. This new hub will enable youth aged 13 to 24 to reconnect with programs leading to a high school diploma or an equivalent credential and employment. Students 21 or over who have aged out of city schools will be referred to GED and high school equivalency program options. According to a public impact report, prior to the 2020 pandemic, Newark's youth disconnection hovered around 4,000 young people. But COVID-19 has resulted in trends that indicate a much larger number now. The program has already been a success. Enter Stefan Young.
I'm 25 years old. I'm from New Jersey Central, to be exact. As of right now, I have two jobs, and I'll be enrolling in Rutgers North for majoring. I'm going for business, and now I'll start fall 24. Coming back to society after being incarcerated, it could cause a lot of things, mental health, you know what I'm saying? Because you don't have support, you don't have nothing. So it feel like you just the end of the world for you. So people tend to go back to their old way when certain things not working out for them. You know, by going to job interview, they don't get the job. They don't have clothes, so they want to, you get what I'm saying? So it's definitely a lot of things that goes on with coming home from prison and they don't have nothing. When you come home to something and it's there, people there for you, no matter if you don't know them, if you search and look, because if you want to change, it all come from you. It don't come from nobody else. You got to start the first step first. It don't come from nobody else. So, getting released from prison, it was scary. It was scary because I didn't want to go back to the streets. That's why it was scary.
Young credits director of Newark Works, Tyreek Rolon, for caring enough to get him involved in the re-engagement effort.
I was introduced to it. Tyreek spoke about it to me. He said he got something going on, pro coming up. And I'm one of the people that went through the program. I'm one of the ones that went through the program and came out with successful things. So it's not going to just work for me only. It's going to work for everyone that comes through. It's not just for me. It's for everyone. If it worked for me, it's going to work for anybody else. That's a fact, isn't it? That's all it is right there. It's going to work for anybody else.
Rolon says he's proud of Young and thinks the new center will provide participants with school placement advising and services and access to academic enrichment, social support, and modified instructional programming.
So this program begins and ends with our great Mayor Rajneesh Baraka with his mission, commitment, and vision, and, you know, focusing on youth and young adults, creating and placing them back on a pathway to graduation and preparing them for the professional world as they begin to learn and grow and become the best version of themselves. I mean, so we're in Newark, right? A little bit about myself. I'm justice impacted as well, as I mentioned earlier, and I was able to, you know, come through workforce while I was pursuing higher education at Essex County College in a program called Next Step. Then I got a scholarship to Rutgers Newark in a program called NJ Step and HLLC, Honors Living and Learning Community, to where I had people in the community pour into me. I came through workforce. So while going to school, I was working on a garbage truck, educated myself, skilled up, got promoted last year to the business administrator's office. And then ultimately the mayor gave me an opportunity to be the director of operations. So in each youth and young adult in Newark and our city, right, I see some of me in them. Right. So I know what it's like to want to be engaged. Right. I know what it's like to be disengaged. I know what it's like to dream and have barriers and challenges in your way. And ultimately, I have the platform, privilege, and obligation to be able to serve our youth and young adults and adults. Right. So it wasn't unusual. Right. You know, we are in Newark. Right. We are one of the most impoverished cities in the country. Right. Undereducated. Right. For many different reasons that was done to our community. So, the one thing that is common in brothers like Stefan and our younger sisters as well is that they all have hope, they all have dreams, they all have resilience. And I think that if you can place an infrastructure around them the same way that infrastructure was placed around me, then the sky is the limit. I mean, like you hear after doing some time for this young brother right here, within 6 months, he's back on a pathway to the state university, right? Working two jobs, taking care of his family. And it's not unheard of, right? It's just an opportunity to give those folks, a real shot. A real shot.
You can find out much more about the Re-Engagement Center by going to the City of Newark website. WBGO commentator Mildred Antenor is fed up. She has seen enough of vandalism related to racism.
I couldn't believe it when I read this news, but recently firefighters found the remnants of a prized bronze statue of Jackie Robinson that was stolen from a public park in Kansas. The statue was cut at the figure's ankles and went missing. Firefighters say that the statue was burned. Now, why would someone want to destroy a statue of an iconic African-American man if race wasn't behind it? We're talking about Jackie Robinson, who broke the color barrier and became the first African-American to play in Major League Baseball in 1947. We're talking about an iconic player who was named Rookie of the Year in 1949 and led the Brooklyn Dodgers to 6 league championships and 1 World Series victory. He was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame in 1962. Now, what could possibly be another believable reason? Now, we've certainly seen this disrespect, these barbaric acts before, haven't we? This year, during Black History Month, a Martin Luther King monument was vandalized in Denver, Colorado. The perpetrators pried off a large bronze plaque and other pieces from the statue's pedestal. And how about Emmett Till's memorial plaque? It's located near where the 14-year-old boy's body was pulled from the Tallahatchie River in 1955. Now, this is the third memorial sign that's been destroyed. The first one was installed in 2007. It was stolen and has never been found. It was then replaced by a second one that was riddled with bullets, and the third one was destroyed again only 35 days after it was installed. So the question remains, why? Why do people feel the need to destroy the memorials of iconic Black figures and people of color? Why is it a problem to celebrate and honor contributors to our society who are of a different race? And why do we want to keep their contributions a secret? Why do we want to edit history when, in fact, history is sacred? For example, Chinese migrants were brought to the United States during the 1800s, specifically to help build the transcontinental railroad system. Over 15,000 Chinese workers helped build the railroads. They were forced to live in tents by the railroad tracks while American workers were given accommodations in train cars. And because of this very dangerous work, 1,200 of them died, and many of them were lynched. Their bodies were often seen hanging from trees near the railroad tracks they had just mounted. But of course, this is buried history. It's certainly not taught in schools, no matter how great or little their funding is, or no matter how exclusive the school is. Look, the fact is that many ethnicities have contributed to making the United States what it is. Iconic, talented, and gifted people from all ethnicities have given their talent and in so many cases have sacrificed their lives to make this country what it is. Isn't it time we recognized and respected their humanity and their contributions? I think it was James Baldwin who said that the future of America lies in this simple question. He said that it is entirely up to the American people and our representatives to look into their hearts, to look into our hearts, and face the question of how they feel about the fact that Blacks and people of color are living in the United States. Deep down in our hearts, do we consider them less than human? And that's a simple but profound question that we each have to face. The future of the country is certainly based on that, and how far we plan to go as a society. What good is it if we produce incredible improvements for humanity, but continue to commit a terrifying injustices against people simply because they're different from us? I'm Mildred Antenor.
Mildred Antenor is a professor and the author of The Gladioli Are Invisible, a memoir. A new film that's now in the post-production stage is called The Theory of Brick City Music, and it's one of many in a web series coming up, The Theory of Brick City Music. And the first episode follows a talented saxophonist on a journey of artistic exploration and personal struggles, accompanied by original jazz-inspired scores. And joining us to talk about the film and the jazz scene in Brick City is Newark filmmaker Livingston Steele. Great to have you on the show, Livingston.
Great to be here, Doug.
And Newark singer and saxophonist Josue Simon. Josue, great to have you here as well.
Thank you, Doug. I appreciate being here.
So, Livingston, you've been hard at work in many ways, trying to create and promote local and emerging musicians and artists in the area. Tell us, first of all, why you're so passionate about this.
Being a Newark native and growing up in the city of Newark, I have always been surrounded by artists and creatives. I went to art high school. I was a musician myself. I played trumpet. I played bass. And I also went to college for music industry. My goal was to work in artist development, to work and help artists grow to be the best possible selves in the industry and find ways to live off of their art. from a business perspective and from an art perspective. So that has always been something that has been intertwined with me and like the goals I've had. And from going from college and coming back to Newark and seeing the acceptance and like the growth in the art community, I thought it'd be really cool to create a show that showcases that. And it expanded from just a show to also a festival. So like the Theory of Bricks and Music is more so an anthology series that showcases different creatives and different types of artists in a narrative, not a documentary, but more so as a narrative. So a lot of it is made up or inspired by certain events, but more so of a narrative for us to be able to relate to and be able to enjoy as a show.
And for you, Josue, not only are you, you know, the subject of this first, you know, you are the actor in this first film, but you are indeed a saxophonist. And so we hear your music. How exciting has this project been for you?
Honestly, to be completely honest with you, it's showed me a different set of ways to approach discipline. Just because in the film medium, it's, you would think that it's very similar to creating music because it's, you know, there's composition involved. So I thought I could go in and be kind of cavalier and just approach things as I do with the studio session or being in an ensemble. But I had to realize that I had to really kind of strip everything back and be a student, because everything I knew for like my musician profession was unnecessary. They didn't need none of it. And they only needed me to convey emotion, as which I can do that easily with my saxophone because I've been playing my entire life. So, being an actor, you have to convey the emotion of words on paper. You know what I mean? It's different than reading notes. It's basically just the beats are different. You kind of have to be really in tune with your director. I was actually lucky that my director was Livingston, but he was able to coach me through all the difficult aspects of filming.
How long have you two known each other?
Very long time. Since I've been probably about 11 years old. I'm 30 now.
Yeah, we all went to middle school together and played instruments. His brother is one of my best friends, is my best friend. And we all played instruments and we went from middle school to high school together. So like I kind of watched Josue develop. But when I went to college and came back, I saw him now more as a professional musician because he wasn't just a kid in high school anymore. He was playing and having gigs. And from me coming from like a music industry background now, from going to school and like interning at Summer Stage and seeing and working with music managers, at the time I was so embedded in like music and helping developing artists. And when I say in the time, this is like 2015, 2016. So the concept of the Theory of Bricks and Music has been around and we've been working on it for some time. The first time in 2016 when we started working on it, it originally was supposed to be able just to showcase creatives from the city of Newark and their music with a light type of narrative. We were able to get into the Newark International Film Festival in 2016, and we were nominated for Best Web Series. And that was my first interaction and the first way of seeing film and being in a film space outside of music. From us going in there and seeing like how film is done in different varieties, different genres, we realized how more important this story or the stories that can be told from this, rather than just being humor and music, but now showing the resilience and showing the actual struggles and challenges a different type of artist may go through. So in 2017-18, we worked on another variation of a 3-episodic pilot series, which in 2018, we were able to win the Newark International Film Festival and Josue won Best Actor, which was really cool because we were able to go up against other web series that had main actors, main storylines, things like that. And we were able to do it with something so homegrown. And that particular series, that pilot series is online now. If you wanted to check it out, the Theory of Bricks and Music YouTube page. From that, we were able to see, like from 2018 and going into 2019, we started doing more promotions of it and showcasing this pilot series. And we were going to try to release more as an episodic run. And then going in 2019-20, COVID happened. So it kind of like stopped our momentum. What happened was I just released the series on YouTube after all of that and like was going to move on because resources and everything went down. But we were able to get grant money because people liked the series in 2021, which led us to be able to create this short film or work on this particular short film. And then instead of like how we did the pilot series where we focused on all of the different types of characters, we take a step back and just focus on the main character or one character like Josue as he's leading the series as it goes into other storylines. So it's been a cool journey because we got to learn more about not just music, film, and how it interacts with other aspects. Like just taking a step back in 2019, we kind of pivoted or like saw a different avenue because we created the Brick City Jams Festival. Accidentally, because we were literally trying to shoot artists or different types of creatives to show that they are creatives from the city of Newark. I was told that people don't normally see creatives, they don't normally see artists, they don't think of artists coming from Newark when you say Newark. So I was going to create visuals for that. And when I went to Abington Walls, which is an outdoor gallery, I worked with a partner of mine who was a muralist and graffiti artist, and he bought 40 different types of graffiti artists from the tri-state to paint in his outdoor gallery. I bought different musicians, things like that in 2019 to shoot just so we could get visuals. And the neighborhood showed up, police showed up, everyone enjoyed it. And like the police shut down the street so we can expand more. People came and just sat down and watched while we were shooting. And while we were doing this, we realized not only are we creating a film to show or a series that showcases this, but also creating a live event where they can actually experience the music. The Brick City Jam itself has grown to its own entity, but still started with the Brick City with the theory of Brick City music, and the theory of Brick City music has grown as itself as we've gotten grant money to do this short film. Now in 2024, so like it took us 2 years to work through the short film version of this, and now we're coming to the tail end of it, still trying to raise money to do the post production, but now looking at it like instead of making episodic series. Like similar to what's already on YouTube for us, we thought it'd be cool to use this as a catalyst to showcase a young artist from Newark, but the storylines and the different types of ways that the community comes together and the different trials and tribulations each artist may have by themselves. So this is like the start now or restart of the theory of Brick City music. And as it goes on, although it may not always talk about Josue's particular character or his particular situations that we wrote for this story, he will always be in helping with me when it comes to creating the original music score. So our next story may be about a muralist from Newark and his trials and tribulations, or a dancer, or a woman DJ, or certain situations like that. But like he'll always help me as I'm orchestrating that music with other creatives that we work with from the Brick City Jam Festival, from him creating his own music and now and showcasing that, and trying to create this community as we are cultivating as a city and bringing more of us together on different types of mediums.
In this film, Josue portrays a stubborn saxophonist who suddenly has to balance music with a new responsibility to care for his sickly mother and delinquent brother after the sudden death of his father. And so the film follows his ups and downs as he attempts to summon up the courage to finish his first album inspired by his father's musical past. How did you relate to this film, Josue?
Oh my God. It's a kind of basically like a mirror of my actual life. Not to say that my brother's a great man. I love him. He's not even close to being a delinquent. He's a great man. But I do have a mother who has been dealing with hypertension and diabetes for majority of my life and other various, you know, ailments that are, you know, commonly kind of dealt with in my community. My father passed away in 2013 when I turned 19 years old. And essentially my father, when I was a sophomore in high school, he started a business. And thank God. So I was able, at 19 years old, he left things in a way, not to say, I don't want to get emotional, but he kind of groomed things in a way that I was able to easily take over after he passed away. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a bit emotional, but the whole situation is very similar to my actual life, but it kind of, like I spoke about in the first question, with a lot of the beats and the information on script, you have to tap into actual emotion. You can't just kind of say what's being said. So that was kind of, I was able to kind of tap into those emotions because it does mirror my life a little bit. In like a very true sense. So
I could see you getting very emotional, not only, you know, here, but as you were doing the film, obviously losing your dad at the age of 19, That has to be so difficult, and it makes you grow up real fast, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, the thing is, my father, he was a very, 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 very passionate man. So it just kind of, it showed me that everything about my, like, I was that kind of kid that I excelled in music. I was always a good saxophonist. And I loved, basically, like, seeing the saxophone the first time was kind of like in the, you know, in those 80s movies when someone sees something that they like, whether it be, I don't know, nice car, you know, the girl that they love interest in the movie, they hear that bum, 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 you know what I mean? Having gates open up. That was what seeing the saxophone the first time was for me. I knew that was my instrument and that we were made for each other. And it, honestly, it wasn't even like I saw like a Maceo Parker or, you know, like the greats. It wasn't a great that turned me on to the saxophone. It was a 12-year-old kid who was at my dad's church, and my dad was in the middle. My dad is a very well-renowned Haitian pastor in the Haitian community. He's one of the most amazing praise and worship leaders that I'm sure the world has ever seen. He just has amazing charisma. He makes you love to just be a part of any form of music that he's a part of. Just brings joy to anything that he's a part of. And he basically, it was during the praise and worship part of service, and the way that he inspired that saxophonist to start playing, and mind you, it's a 12-year-old kid. I thought I was watching a professional, honestly. And funny story, I'm real close with that guy's family. He doesn't play the saxophone anymore. Mm-hmm. But it just goes to show you that that moment did something to him that made him play that saxophone in a way that me personally, it would take for my fingers to be chopped off for me to not play that saxophone. It's literally the absolute love of my life.
So there's an event coming up that will give an opportunity for more to learn more, not only about the film and the series and everything that you want to know about Livingston and Josue. And that is coming up on April 19th. Livingston, you want to tell us a little bit about how that's all come to be at Equal Space in Newark?
Yeah, so April 19th at 7 p.m., we're going to have our first fundraiser for the Theater of Brixey Music Series. We're going to be showing a trailer, official trailer that we've been able to put together for Josue's film, which will be called The Theory of Josue. It will be the first installment. The first installment under the Theory of Brixey Music banner. And that day, we will not only be presenting Josue's new music, music from the show, or even the collaborations of us as artists with filmmakers and whatnot, but Josh has a great lineup of special guests from the city, special music that we want the city and beyond to be able to enjoy. So we're doing our best to involve people, to invite people, not only raising money for the Theater of Brixey Music, we're raising money for the Brixey Jam Festival that we're also growing grassroots and have a bunch of shows planned for the next 6 months. And this is going to be a great time for us to, you know, unpack what's going on with what we're doing and how everyone can be involved for the years to come as we continue to push this forward.
Just wait. 25 to 44 is the age group that a lot of times that Livingston is targeting. You have the forum right now. You have an audience from WBGO that goes all the way up to the 90s, and maybe we have a listener who's 100 listening right now. What do you want to tell the listeners of WBGO about the young emerging artists in Newark and about jazz that maybe we don't know?
Well, what I will tell you is that jazz is very much so alive and well in the city. Very much so. Myself, personally, I am currently working with Mr. Leo Johnson to basically form myself completely within the jazz realm. And I'm working with NJ Pack to immerse myself more into that. And also, when it comes to that, I want the community that is within WBGO to know that the young people are very, like, willing to learn. We're sponges. No one is in the process that thinks that they know it all. And they like, what, for me personally, I understand as a musician, iron sharpens iron. And it's never a bad thing to take in information, especially from someone who's experienced more than you. Because There's no substitute for experience. And me personally, I did shy away from jazz as a younger musician because I understood that there was a standard, like we spoke about earlier. There's a standard to how things have to be done, and you have to respect that. And it took me becoming a bit older and going through certain experiences within life to get the proper respect for it.
You can see my entire conversation with Josue Simon and Livingston Steele on the WBGO Facebook page. Thanks for listening to the WBGO Journal. I'm Doug Doyle. Join us next Saturday morning at 5:30 for another edition of the award-winning WBGO Journal. In the meantime, stay tuned to the world's greatest jazz and blues station, WBGO and WBGO.org.